Welcome to a brand new podcast. We're talking to you guys through $30 mics that we bought off of Amazon with one day free shipping. So shout out Amazon. I'm one of your hosts, Joshua Long, here in Michigan. Right beside me in the beautiful Seahawks man cave is my best friend and best man in my wedding, the Iceman, Dylan Holt.
Iceman, I like it.
Like,
did you just give Amazon a free shout out on our first episode?
This is where we plant the seed
okay.
to see if we can get Jeff Bezos to spread some of his money to us up and new coming podcast hosts.
I like it. All right, it's a good idea.
Yeah. And joining us from Florida, I won't give out your city, but joining us from Florida is my best friend in college. Opened up many new doors for me in college because I was very introvert, I guess I would say. But this man is a wealth of knowledge. Big Daddy Ben Kozab.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll keep my location in Florida undisclosed, because as this thing grows, you know, I'll be walking celebrity around here. I gotta make sure I keep covert.
Ben, I got to ask you a question. Did you make your way over to Tampa Bay, clang a few beers, get on those boats with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, throw some Lombardi trophies around? Did you go and do that?
Oh, my gosh. If only. If the wife wasn't pregnant, we would have been there. We would be there for WrestleMania this year, too. You know, it would have been a really fun time to see Gronk and Tom Brady throwing that statue over open water.
You know, real quick, I've also got a Super Bowl story, but it was from last year. I was down in Miami for work, Super Bowl weekend, and the day before they had a big get together, and I happened to be a member of the elite. I get my cellular service from Verizon Wireless.
Ooh, so, shout out Verizon.
Yeah, so I got into a special elite party. And after 9 or 10 company-expensed mojitos, I went to see what all the crowd was gathering around. It just happened to be Emmett Smith giving a talk up on a stage. I'm not sure what it was about, but I know that I heckled the shit out of that man and got thrown out of a pre-Super Bowl party. Hammered in downtown Miami for heckling Emmett Smith.
Jeez.
Highlight of my life.
Goodness gracious. You know, the Hall of Famer, Emmett Smith.
Yeah, I know I asked him how much faster Barry would have beaten the rushing record if he hadn't retired.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I did, and it did not go over well.
I couldn't imagine it would.
No.
But did he answer the question?
He did not, and that was when some muscular men decided to escort me out of the party.
you hit a hot button there.
Apparently. You know, I can't see why. I mean...
So, Ben, that kind of reminds me of the time that you and I went to Dallas. You remember that? We went down to Dallas, and I... By the way, you and Robert Gifford... shout-out Robert Gifford. You and Robert Gifford ruined my WWE experience, and I'll tell you why. WrestleMania, when we went down there for Arlington, was probably one of the better WrestleManias. Am I wrong?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good, especially live.
Yeah. So I had never been to a wrestling event, and my first wrestling event is the Big Daddy, the Super Bowl of all WWE, WrestleMania, and it was fantastic. It was the greatest time I have ever had. And meeting some of the wrestlers, I tried to put my arm around Ryback when we went to the what was it called? It was the WWE Access, right?
Yeah.
And I remember we went to that Elimination Chamber thing because we got in half hour early. We were meeting Sting. We ain't missing Sting. So we get in half hour early. And we get to the Elimination Chamber. We didn't know what wrestler was coming out. And all of a sudden, Ryback comes out. And Ben went up and wanted to get... What was his move? I'll let you share that story.
The shell shock.
Yeah, I'll let you share that part. But I remember going up and talking to him, and I tried to wrap my arm, try to get a picture with him, and I could not reach, like, to his other shoulder. He was that big. And it just shocked me.
Yes, you're not a small man.
I'm not a small man. I'm trying to get smaller. COVID-19 has put on 21 pounds.
I did not mean that type of small. I did not mean that type of big. I'm just saying.
Yeah, the last name doesn't mean anything from the waist down, as you might know.
Oh, Lord. There you go.
But, Ben, I remember you said you asked Ryback to do what to you?
The shell shock. So that was his finisher at the time, and I called him by his legal name. He now changed his name to Ryback, which that's a fun fact I learned the other day. But he legally did that, I guess. But I walked in and I introduced myself and said, how much money is it going to take for you to give me the shell shock right here? And he kind of looked at me, kind of chuckled a little bit, and he was like, probably not enough to cover the legal fees, so we're gonna stay away from that one today.
Oh, jeez.
Fair enough. But yes, to attest to what you were saying, Josh, the guy was a tank. My understanding, he still is, but he was in phenomenal shape at that time. He was pretty leaned out at that point too. He was still size of a brick.
He was leaned out and that big. He was that big being leaned out.
Yeah. The width of his shoulders is insane.
My God. Well, yeah, I tried to hug him. My God. He might have done that finisher on me if I tried.
The WWE All Access event has to be one of the only places where you can ask a man how much for you to give me a shell shock right here and not be breaking any laws.
But that was a great time.
What happens at Access stays at Access. Podcast.
You don't want to ask that question in the alley behind the stadium.
Jeez.
No, definitely not that.
I think we met a few other people down there too, Ben. I remember
there was a bunch of people, random people that we were just bumping into.
Who did you bump into?
Deborah Michelli. She's probably more known in the universe as Medusa or Alundra Blaze, depending on what channel on Mondays you were watching as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I bumped into Billy Kidman. Paul White? No, not Paul White. Who's the referee? The short guy. Remember he did the little bit for a while where he kept killing himself on camera, but would come back every week, kind of like a Kenny from South Park type deal.
Ooh, we're gonna have to look that up.
He was there. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but
Charles Robinson.
He was there. I bumped into Mr. Bob Backlund during the show. Actually, when I was on my way to the bathroom, he was walking around doing something. He had a posse of people with him, but he had his red suspenders and white collared shirt, so at least shake his hand.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a cool experience because the wrestlers, they just kind of intermingled with a lot of people, unless they were obviously your big top level guys, your main card guys weren't doing that, but yeah, if you wanted to interact, you'd have to. There's a price to pay for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, was it Charles Robinson? Was he the wrestling referee that?
No, well, yeah, he's still repping, but no, it wasn't Charles Robinson.
Hmm.
He's that little Nate, Charles Robinson. I don't know. It'll come to me in a second, I'm sure.
Yeah. So and we also, when we were down there, we sat in those bleachers and they had made up a ring there, and then we just sat down and all of a sudden the Dudley Boys come out.
Oh, nice.
They had was it NXT at the time that was doing a match right there, and then the Dudley Boys came out after?
Yeah, with some of their developmental guys.
Yeah.
Some of the developmental people, there was the Dudleys were kind of doing, and who was the other group? It was New Day. New Day came out too, didn't they?
I can't remember if New Day did or not. I mean, you're talking to a guy that, Dylan and I, and you both lived through probably the greatest part of wrestling history with the Monday Night Wars. You're talking to a guy that never watched Monday Night Wars. This guy is going back. Now, I did get the WWE Network for what, Ben? $9.99 a month.
$9.99.
Shout out WWE.
Oh, my God.
We're trying to get all we're trying to get all the sponsors.
No free sponsors.
But I started with Raw, the debut of Raw, and I'm going to go through the Attitude Era. Once Monday Night Nitro kicks off, I'll start watching that. So I'm doing that plus the pay-per-views, all that stuff. But, like, you know, I was – when we were down there, and that's why I can't recall these wrestlers, is because I just don't know. But you open up a whole new world for me down there, and – it kind of makes me feel bad not watching this stuff when it was live.
Oh, I tell you what, back when I haven't watched wrestling in a long time, but during the Monday Night Wars, when you could go from NWO and Hollywood Hulk Hogan doing a leg drop on someone.
Cures cancer.
That leg drop does cure cancer.
Then you flip the channel and you see Stone Cold Steve Austin getting thrown a beer, chugging it in the ring, kicking someone in the groin, and then giving them a stunner. I mean, you can't beat that. No period in wrestling, in my opinion, has ever beaten that.
You'll have fun watching that back too, Josh, because you're going to be attentive to so many other little details that they plugged in that I think I didn't even recognize or pay attention to when I was a kid. I never gave it the type of attention that really truly needed because I was so fixated on just, you know, seeing what I wanted to see. And I was more of a USA Network Monday Night Raw type of guy growing up. Although WCW came through Detroit, I think, more often with live shows, and we would go all the time. Like, I was at Halloween Havoc 94. That was Flair and Hogan in a steel cage. Like, that place was rock.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. Two of the greats right there. I mean, like, a lot of wrestlers, like, I believe Stone Cold, Undertaker, Sting, all talk about, you know, Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, being the guy to look up to.
Yeah. And probably rightfully so. I know the younger generation now that's watching wrestling probably doesn't really know Ric Flair like everybody does back in the day, but he might be arguably the greatest heel of all time in the industry.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that, speaking of like Ric Flair, I mean, when I got in, when I started the Raw from day that, you know, the first Raw episode, Ric Flair was still on there with Mr. Perfect. And so, like, he, and that, at the time, because I started not seeing him on there, Ric Flair, that is, what probably went down to the WCW at that time, right?
Yeah, he went back to WCW. Didn't they do, like, a career match? Flair versus Perfect, the loser had to quit or something, or leave the WWE?
Yeah, I think there was something that on Monday night about that. But then I texted you because Jeff Jarrett came in, and he did that strut. And he always played that, like, you know, I'm hurt, or no, like what Ric Flair did on his knees, just begging. And I texted you, I'm like, is he supposed to be the replacement, like a character replacement to Ric Flair since he left?
Well, they had a lot of faith and a lot of hope for Jeff Jarrett coming in. I know Jerry Jarrett was brought in either around that time or right after, whenever the steroid trial was coming in, because there was the possibility that Vince was going to get tied up in court longer than he was, or potentially be convicted of anything and would have to step away from the wrestling business. Jerry Jarrett was a family, you know, a friend of his father's or things of that nature, whatever the family history there. They brought him in, and this is all, from my understanding, listening to Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson on their Something to Wrestle With podcast, where they referenced or told this story about the steroid trial, and if Vince was going to go away, then they had to have somebody lined up to kind of take the reins for a little bit until they could get things figured out. But thankfully, in Vince's world, he ended up being acquitted, so it worked out. But they brought him in, but of course, you know, Jeff came with, type of thing, mm-hmm. right? And he had a lot of talent. I know that in his mind, he should have been top level at that point. But as you can see, I think mid-card was where he should have been at, and he had some good feuds in there. But he definitely resembled Ric Flair in how he handled everything and how he reacted. The different bits and parts that he would put in there, I felt like he did really well.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
I have never liked Jeff Jarrett in any company, any level. I have never liked Jeff Jarrett, so I can't really speak to that. Talented in the ring, tactician. That's technician. That's fine. Once words started leaving his mouth, I tuned out.
Is that Southern draw?
I don't know.
Do you think he was a bad country singer? I know that he came up saying that no one wanted to give him a chance country singing.
You know what? He ruined a lot of acoustic guitars. And a lot of hard work went into those instruments, and I think I resented that.
Yeah. Oh, man.
See, Ben, when we were... I'm assuming you're about my age. When we were growing up, we got to see the entire career arc of The Rock. He started out as Rocky Maivia.
Oh, yeah.
And then he joined the corporation and became one of Vince McMahon's personal bodyguards. And I put him right up there with Ric Flair as one of the best all-time heels when he was with the corporation.
Yeah, and I'm going to back it up a little further between those two and talk about the Nation of Domination, because I think that's where he really started getting some of his bearings with his promo. They started giving him the mic a little bit more.
Yes.
But I thought he was on as Vince's guy because, they needed somebody to, Vince couldn't fight Steve Austin every week. He needed somebody to protect him, and The Rock and Austin made magic in that ring.
Oh, that was absolutely amazing.
An amazing promo. It led the storylines that they wrote, because eventually he breaks away from Vince and does the whole thing, So it's like that was gold. And The Rock, to be honest, watching him today, did you watch his show the other night, his debut?
No, the Young Rock? No, I didn't watch it.
I didn't either.
I highly recommend it. The wife and I sat down and watched it. She's not a huge wrestling fan by any stretch, but she likes those type of things. She's got certain characters that she enjoys. Mainly if they're on the reality shows, but
The Miz.
It was kind of cool listening to him literally telling stories about his experiences with his father and some of the other, his experiences behind the scenes and in the business, and kind of exposing a little bit more of the underbelly at that time. Things that had kayfabe still been a thing in today's world, there's no platform for this show at all because it completely exposes it. But they have some actors, playing these wrestlers at the time. So seeing guys that when I first started wrestling, the Wild Samoans off in Sika, and they've got an Andre the Giant character in there. And,
oh, wow.
And it's just wild. But my favorite person, was the Iron Sheik in this whole thing. I'm talking like him. There's a lot of guys that will impersonate him, and I can't do an impression of him at all, but I thought they did a really good job on the show, and I was laughing hysterical, and my wife's looking at me like, crazy.
I get that look a lot. I'm gonna not from your wife, from mine.
Right there with you.
I'm gonna have to check that out.
Ben, that reminds me, I watched, I think it was, WrestleMania 18, the match between The Rock and Hogan. Is that correct?
Mm.
Yeah. That crowd in Toronto was just electric. I mean, when Hogan came down the aisle, and he was supposed to be the heel at the time, right, because he was part of NWO, WCAW had probably just folded at that time.
Okay.
NWO comes up. And so it's the young stud Rock, right? Probably now becoming the face of WWE, if I'm safe to say that, facing probably yeah, one.
It was a little bit of an interesting scenario because he was a face, but Hogan was a heel, but he was the heel that everybody loved.
Is Toronto his town?
Like Steve Austin personality in WCW for the longest time with the NWO. It was like they were cool. It was cool to cheer the bad guys, you know.
Yeah, what is Toronto Hogan's town?
The whole Northeast. I mean, you think about Hogan spent how much time up there with WWF and Vince Sr. and then Vince Jr. Like, you know, like WrestleMania match in New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Philly, Buffalo, and Toronto was huge. Huge WWE town. And Toronto is big. I mean, the Canadian fan base is quite incredible. And it's crazy how even, like, the different towns really play off one another. But Toronto, you know, just the animosity between Toronto and Montreal alone, and then throwing, like, wrestlers in there and things like that. Like, it's crazy how they go wild for some of these things. But they love Hogan in Toronto.
I mean, you could just... I mean, I don't think anyone sat down in that match because I was just watching. I watched that match a couple times. Have you seen it, Dylan?
No, I did not see that one.
Oh my gosh, you need to see that. I mean, that crowd was just electric, and I got more to watch. You know, obviously, I got a ton of years to pick up and watch WWE
if
Network.
If you've just started, would you quit giving away free sponsorships? Yeah, if you've just started from when Raw came into existence, you've got a lot of time to cover.
I got a lot of time.
And you haven't even started on WCW?
No, because I think it came out, I think Nitro started in September of 95, right, Ben?
That sounds about right.
So I was planning to go, like, so I'm doing, you know, Raw, you know, WrestleMania hits, then Raw, then SummerSlam, Raw, then Survivor Series, Raw, then Royal Rumble. So I'm falling in order as if I was reliving the 90s. Probably the best time. I had the bowl cut, but...
Parted down the middle. Don't leave that part out because I had the straight-up bowl cut. The Lloyd Christmas Dumb and Dumber bowl cut.
Ben, did you have a bowl cut?
I had the comb-over that I'm rocking.
The comb over. I tell you what, Dylan's got some luscious
it
locks going on.
When I got to like high school, but like just the comb over, you know, and it came back.
everything is cylindrical. You know, it all comes back.
Well, right now, I've still got my hair, so I'm rocking the flow. It looks really good in my hockey helmet. So
he's got what do you got? What's that hat called? It's like a golfer hat.
It's a hipster style. I've been to every brewery in town hat.
Yes, it looks great. He has long hair. It's about down to his shoulders. It looks amazing.
It's a luscious mane.
I think the one time he cut it was for
wedding. He's able to give you the flavor notes of every IPA on tap.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes. I can break down which hops are in this beer and the IBUs of every one.
I think, Dylan, the last time you cut your hair like that was for my wedding, right?
It was, yes. That is the last time that I got a haircut roughly 2 years ago? A year and a half?
Yeah, because we just had our first anniversary. We had to go to Ohio for our anniversary.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the worst.
Well, yeah. But, but you know, we're locked down here in Michigan, so I actually got my date engraved on my ring. So
okay.
I cannot forget.
Oh, good.
I don't know if you've done that yet, Ben, but it's probably one of the best. Like, it was free because I got my ring at Hacker's Jewelers is no longer in business. But yeah, he retired. You gotta retire sometime. That's why we're doing this podcast because we're trying to retire early.
He didn't sell the business.
He didn't sell it, but he had like a big. Like sale going on, you know, 50% off, and then up to 60, up to 75, you know, that whole thing.
Prices were wild.
And so you know, part of the ring was, and that's the thing is, you lose a guy that you have in your corner like that. Like I got a mechanic for my cars that I will never go to another place.
JT?
Yep, Scott Cagle. Yep. And just because once you get people that you trust, especially in things like that, you just want to go to them. And he did. This is how good of a place this was. I'm sorry, I'm hijacking this. I forgot what we were talking about before this, but
we were talking about sports on the sports podcast. But no, by all means, go ahead and talk about out of business jewelry stores.
Yes, out of
hey, it's your man cave, man. You make the rules.
Man, this is our first podcast that already sucks. No, it's going great. She was allergic to white gold, and we found that out after I had got the engagement ring.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that could be an allergy.
I didn't think so either, because it could be the nickel that's mixed into the gold to make it the white. There's something else in there too. But this is how good of it. This is a great example of once you find people that you can trust, to always keep them in your corner. After she wore it and noticed that she was getting bumps right underneath the ring, and they were itchy and everything, we went back to that store, and they gave me all of my money back, because there was a ring and a diamond that I picked out, and they took that son of a bitch apart. They gave me back all my money, and then we applied that to a platinum band, which is working out great for her. So we found out that she likes the finer jewelry in life.
Oh, only the best.
Only the best.
You know, I know your wife, and she puts up with you, so she deserves absolutely only
that. I should have been divorced, like, the day after we were married, Ben. That's how much she loves me. I love her, too. So, but getting back on topic
here. We had a topic?
We had a topic.
Okay.
We forgot to mention what this podcast is about. As you can tell, the podcast that we're doing is primarily going to be about sports. The big sports, you know, we might dabble into, baseball or NBA. And I'm going to be honest with you, that's not my forte. Football, college football is more of my forte. And we're just here to talk about stories, rumors, and maybe even throw out some betting out there for you guys that do the FanDuel or the DraftKings or any other betting sites.
Well, I have a couple bets going right now. And checking scores here, the Red Wings are losing 4-1, so it is going to be very hard for them to win 3-2 like I placed my bet.
How'd you get riding on it?
listen, like if you need help with any team going against Florida Panthers, I'm in Florida Panther Cruncher down here, and these boys are on a whole different level right now.
Oh, no, I understand. Jonathan Huberdeau is out of this world.
It's crazy how these kids have progressed down here over the last few years, and they turned in, like, 1 year's time. They were a non-playoff team last year. This year they're on pace to win the division, possibly be the best record in the league.
Yeah, I mean, if I could talk hockey for days. Florida has been my dark horse pick for the past 3 years, but
yeah.
It seemed like this year the Wings were playing them really, really tough. And the last two games the Red Wings played against Chicago, they were good games, and they won the game before that against Nashville. So I thought, you know what, they might be putting this together. I should have known better, because it's the Detroit Red Wings, and it's a Jeff Blashill coached team. So I bet with my heart instead of my head.
Yeah. I feel that this world, I mean, they're on the right track. At least this is the way I feel with looking at them and seeing these young talent. They have a ton of talent in developmental that's not quite ready yet, that's on the brink. And with a couple savvy vets, maybe a couple off-season moves. I feel like they're really like one, maybe two big playmakers away from being a contending team. I'm not going to say back to restore what they had in the glory days of the 90s, early 2000s, but because they're a long shot from that. But we also, like, it's a completely different team, and I feel like they're on that of possibly turning it over, because some of these games are close. And, you know, but there's a lot of fundamentals that I feel like Blashill should be able to clean up, and he's not.
No, Jeff Blashill hasn't had much talent in his tenure, but it still falls on him, because with the draft picks they've been getting, he should be developing the talent. Anthony Mantha's great. He has not developed like he should. Dylan Larkin is...
He's like night and day from last year to this year, too. He's just in a funk this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Mantha started out on fire last year, even in the World Championships. He was lights out. This year, at the beginning of the year, it looked like he didn't have that drive.
Right.
He's picking it up a little bit now. But the power play as of tonight, I believe, was 0 for their last 30 and 1 for the last 36. So I truly believe in a non-COVID year, they would have a different coach, because special teams issues have bit them in the ass for the past 2 or 3 years. It's been real bad. But with the 2-week quarantine for anyone coming into the league or switching teams, you can't go without a coach for 2 weeks. So right. I think their hands are tied unless there's a league stoppage or until the off season. But I don't think Jeff Blashill's getting another year. I pray Jeff Blashill's not getting another year.
It'll be interesting to see what Stevie does, and I would not be surprised if they do have a change in the guard, too, because if they truly are rebuilding, that starts with the leadership, too.
Yeah, absolutely it does. And, you know, Larkin, God bless him, he's been the guy for the past 3 years that has to answer all the questions. He finally got the C this year. But you can't keep playing in a dumpster. You know, you can't play for a dumpster fire team for 4 years and, you know, be expected to maintain that winning attitude.
I agree.
But going back to the Panthers, my God, if you're down in Florida territory, first of all, you can get tickets for $1.
the only time that I've ever been to a Panthers game, and we frequent there quite a bit.
Okay.
And the only time that they ever, like, truly sell out, and this is all pre-COVID, of course, is when the Rangers are in town. Because there's a huge New York snowbird population, as well as people who've relocated from that area of the world that love the Rangers. And when the Rangers are in town, that place sells out.
Yeah.
Any other game, the Red Wings close. The Red Wings get pretty packed as well, but they don't get close to sell out. It's kind of like, you know, you pick the litter, and if you wait to buy tickets the day of off of an app or something, and secondhand tickets, you get them for a song.
Oh my gosh, right now at the LCA, the Wings are hot garbage. But last year, tickets were still at a premium, especially if you wanted to watch anyone come through there, the Leafs. I mean, even the Oilers, just because of Connor McDavid, but yeah. I'm so jealous right now with the Panthers.
Get their money back on that building.
Yeah, change the seats colors, you know, you gotta do that.
$20 a beer, you know.
Yeah, side tangent, because Josh mentioned it, but they had to change the seats from red to black. They say because the Pistons play there too, so we can't have red seats, you know, because red isn't a Pistons color. But have you noticed...
Literally in their logo.
Oh yeah, have you noticed the color of the drapery that they put over the seats this year?
I did not notice the drapery.
It's... censorship.
Censorship.
It's, gosh darn, red! It's like, come on! You can't sell the building out. Just admit it. Anyways, one more time. Going back to the Panthers. I'm so jealous of you right now, Ben. You guys got Barkov. You got Huberto. Mackenzie Weegar has come on this year. Toronto tried, or they tried to trade him for Toronto, and they said, no thanks. The Maple Leafs don't need someone like Mackenzie Weegar. Have you seen the numbers he's putting up?
It's insane.
My only problem with the Panthers is the goalie situation and the outrageous amount
that they gave to Bobrovsky.
Yeah, and it, based upon on how some of these games are scored, the Panthers have been scoring 4 or 5 goals a game.
Oh, yeah.
The last couple of weeks, right? It's insane. But they're also giving up 3 to 4 or 5 goals a game, which, you know, for the type of money that they're paying for their goaltending, you know, you expect a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, Bobrovsky's not even their best goaltender this year. And it's not like they don't have any...
No.
It's not like they don't have anyone in the pipeline. They drafted Spencer Knight, the best U.S.-born goaltender since, DiPietro? Was he American?
I would like to say yeah. I want to say he's, like, from Chicago area, but I could be completely wrong about that.
But, man, it's just that goaltending situation's untenable. They've got to get rid of somebody. All right, that's...
Yeah, it's a rough gig for goalies these days. All the goalies seem to be getting beat up pretty bad this year.
All right, we've talked hockey for 10 minutes. People are probably asleep now. Should we switch over to the NFL?
I just want to, since we're talking about NHL, I'm going to throw this one epic event that happened in my life this morning, Ben. This is the MLB. Mm-hmm. And if you guys got anything to share about the MLB, you go right ahead. I am what you probably would call a newborn to the MLB.
Okay.
So today, Ben and Dylan.
Yes?
I became an owner of the Atlanta Braves.
An owner?
I'll let that sink into your guys' heads for a minute. An owner.
Storied franchise.
An owner of the Atlanta Braves. Anyone want to know?
Yeah, I'm so far off of baseball. I don't even know how is this possible, Josh. Please tell me.
Yeah, edge of my seat here. What do you guys got on?
Okay, so me, I like to do random things. Okay, yes. And I was on my couch. There's really nothing on the TV, so I was like, "Huh, how do you own sports teams?" So I looked it up in in Google.
No free ads.
No free ads. I looked it up in Google, and, you know, obviously Green Bay came up because you could, at the time, I think it was back in 2011, I think they sold, like, the shares for $250 a piece.
Yeah.
Really no dividends or no appreciation.
Or soul.
Or no.
I hate the Packers.
Well, that's because the Lions suck. But that we'll get into that.
Can't confirm, but you're a dick.
Continue. Hey, Motor City Dan Campbell, though. But we'll get into that. Anyway, so like I was like, huh, well, what other sports teams are, you know, quote-unquote publicly traded? Well, let me talk to you about Liberty Media Group, okay? This is a company out in Colorado, and one of their subsidiaries owns and operates the Atlanta Braves. So, I bought 4 shares of stock symbol BATRA at 28 and change per share. So, I'm into the Atlanta Braves for a little over $100.
Hey, the guys start somewhere.
This is my... This is what I do, Ben.
So you want to retire?
There's like an obscure MLS team out there you can pick up two wires.
Seattle Sounders, right? They're for sale, probably.
So you want to retire from this podcast?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you bought 2 microphones.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
For $29.99
and downloaded 2 free programs.
Yeah, you spend $100 to say that you own part of the Atlanta Braves.
Yes.
I'm glad you have your priorities.
It makes sense in my head.
I'm glad you have your priorities.
I, I completely see this, like, the Dumb and Dumber purchase where he swapped the van for that bike.
Because you completely redeem yourself.
Yes, I completely redeem myself. I do not know, but was it Freeman, the first baseman? I think that's the
Freddie Freeman.
I think that's the only guy I know on the Atlanta Braves. But now being a new owner of the
yeah, man, you got to get acquainted with your players.
I do. I got to step into a press. Hey, Atlanta Braves, if you're listening to this, I need to come on down there and give a good pep talk to spring training. Probably starts, what, end of February, spring training does?
Pitchers and catchers are part of today, Josh.
Okay. Yeah.
Breaking news.
New owner of the Atlanta Braves does not know when pitchers and catchers report. But I'm ready to fulfill my role as a shareholder in this company and support my Atlanta Braves coming up in this new MLB season. Hopefully there'll be more people in the stands, but
well, I hope for your investment. I mean,
speaking of that, it went down, you know, for obvious reasons. So no one's going to the ballparks. Wait till we come back roaring back in 2021, and people are selling out. I don't even know what the stadium's called. I just bought into the Braves.
Oh my gosh.
I'm looking for a return investment. You know, maybe I'll throw a first pitch out there someday. Ben, what do you think?
I think you would do great. You know, if you get at least hit the catcher, then you're getting somewhere.
Well, it's not a guarantee, Ben. I've seen this man try and play baseball.
Oh.
He almost made our high school team on our high school graduating class of 69 kids.
Yeah, is that him? I thought it was like 72.
Yeah, it was 69 graduating, and they take 68 on the team.
Yeah, yeah, he.
Okay,
he almost made the team.
Okay, all right. Listen,
that was close.
Okay, it's senior year. Okay, senior year of my in high school, and I was doing track. I was throwing shot put and disc. And you can do dual sport in the spring, which would be in baseball. So I talked to Dylan, and I said, I never played past coach's pitch, and I'm looking like batting, you know, 1,000 here, Ben. I'm ready to go. And so he said, yeah, come on out, try out. I mean, you'll make the team.
So we had never had cuts in the past 3 years.
So I try out, and at this time, I had a slight shoulder problem stemming from football.
You threw one pitch, and your shoulder went out of socket, Jack.
It did.
It's not a slight problem.
I have a slight subluxation problem with my right shoulder, Ben. And actually, I'm going to see a specialist on that on March 1st to see what we're going to do about that. But it's been like, what, 20 years coming? You got scars. Yeah, I don't want to do that.
It's a good school scar, man. Check, dig the scars.
I don't want to go on tonight. Anyway, so I try out. So I was like, I'm going to dual sport in the springtime. Ben, I have never been cut or benched or not start for a team.
Can't say that anymore.
Can't say that anymore. We get to the end of the tryout period. I think it was like a week or two or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, I get pulled into the coach's office. Mind you, this is a football coach of mine that I just got out of season with.
A man you respect.
One of our funniest coaches that we have ever had. And he pulls me into the office and he says, Josh, I'm going to be honest with you. If you want to stay with this team, you're probably not going to play that much. So I was doing throwing anyway, so I'm just like, it kind of hurt me a little bit, knowing that my best friend said that, oh, yeah, well, you'll make the team. You'll make the team, Josh. Don't you worry about that, Josh. Try out for 2 weeks, Josh. Come and play with us, Josh. You haven't played since coach's pitch. That's a step up from T-ball. Come and play with us, Josh. And I thought I did rather well. And then I have a coach tell me, it's like, Josh, you know, since this is the first year you've played since you were maybe 6 or 7 years old, you're not going to play that much. And it was just a little part of me died that day.
To be fair, I think they just I mean, we were competing for championships here. We had a good team. I don't think they had the time to unearth the talent that laid within, like, deep
within. I was a Ken Griffey Jr. ready to pounce, Ben. I was ready to slug that thing right out to left field.
It would have had to be DH because you threw one pitch in your shoulder.
Right.
Came out of socket.
Right.
So, I mean, if the plate was really your calling.
I could have been chewing, you know, sunflower seeds, spitting them out, being a real baseball player, getting like a pound of gum in my cheek.
Oh, yeah.
Chewing.
Yeah.
Actually, my parents were probably the happiest I've ever seen them when it came to sports. They said, thank God that we don't have to sit through a baseball game.
Ouch.
Did you have a good, yeah, you guys had a good team that year, right?
Yeah, we had a good team. We lost
some
regionals.
No offense to the baseball players out there.
No. The Atlanta Braves, no offense to you guys. I'm all in this 110%.
Oh, yeah, that's how this started. You own the Atlanta Braves.
I own 4 shares. I probably own maybe a baseball down there, maybe a Louisville Slugger, the bat.
For $4 or for $100?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Maybe one of those. Do they wear, screwing cleats in the baseball?
No, they're all going to be
fixed. Maybe like a
jockstrap.
Jockstrap.
You own a jockstrap.
Freeman's jockstrap,
yep,
is what I own.
They have,
Ben,
your name embroidered on it on the inside.
Yes.
SunTrust Park, by the way, is the field that you own part of.
Listen, listen, Braves, I would love to come to
SunTrust Park. There you
I
go.
Would love to come down there, throw a few balls. Hit a couple dingers.
You can throw one ball before you
throw one ball. We're going to get that figured out, and I'm going to be throwing 98 cutters, baby. Just, I don't even know what a cutter is. I know that I've seen it in MLB, the show 17, the last baseball game I ever played. A four seam, you know, two seam coming in at you. They're missing out. It's
I would
like,
pay money to watch this. I would pay money to watch this. You know what? You might have a chance. They play spring ball in Northport, so if you get down to Florida, it's on the West Coast, so it's just 75 straight shot.
Straight shot down.
Flying to Tampa, and see what you got, you know, see if go out there, meet the squad, give them pep talk for camp, because, you know, just like you in high school, somebody's going to get cut too, you know, somebody's not going to make the main roster, and they're going to get sent to the minors, and it's your chance, to, you know. Listen, like, if you get cut from this team, you could be part owner, too. You know, give them a pep talk.
I like it, Ben. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get cut from the team, you might as well have an owner tell you, you know, that you can still be part of this organization. I like that idea.
Not even just, like, you know, a rich stooge out there.
No.
Well, I'm a common man.
A man of the people.
A man of the people. I come down there, and I break it to him. Hey, man, you got a hell of an arm. Your swing needs a little work. Need to run those bases a little faster. Slide, you know the slide rule here?
You know the slide rule.
Yeah.
You're in the major leagues. You know that you can slide, right?
Yeah. The show, it ain't for everybody, right? It wasn't for me. I found out in high school. The show wasn't for me. So, but.
I can see it now. You're down there talking to them. You're like, hey, I need a return on this investment.
Oh yeah! I say,
let's go.
We gotta meet shareholders' expectations. I'm sorry, you're cut, dude. I out of here.
I mean, yeah, you have your choice here. You can either be, you know, the gentle owner that lets them know, hey, you know, it's not all bad, or you can be the guy that tells them, hey, get your head out of your ass. I need to make my money on this team.
What was that show? It was Hardball. It was about the Oakland A's.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be like that. I don't know. I never saw that movie.
No, Moneyball.
Moneyball.
Yeah, with Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill.
Yeah, Moneyball.
Hardball. I think wasn't Hardball the one with Keanu Reeves?
Replacements is one I know. That's a football movie.
No, the baseball movie where he coached a baseball
team. Oh, it was a remake, wasn't it?
Oh, Bad News Bears.
No.
Are we just naming baseball movies now?
We are.
Rookie of the Year.
Oh, that's a great movie. Oh, my God. Give me the good stuff.
Henry Rose.
Rosenbagger.
Garnhoser. Get out there. Yeah. That was a great movie.
Oh my.
Should we jump into something?
Yes. It was called, just to clarify things, that Keanu Reeves movie was called Hardball.
Hardball. Okay. See, I thought that was the porno version of Moneyballers. Oh, okay. If it came out before that, it makes sense.
Hardball.
Oh, Hardball. Oh, you're right. You're right.
It's a girl. There's an S there.
It was a teen movie.
That's a nice slugger you got there with those two baseballs.
The S is for semen.
All right.
All right. Hey, NFL.
Hey, that's good. It's time for a transition.
Yeah, insert transition here. NFL. You know what? One of the big things that surprised the hell out of me about the NFL this year is that we didn't get any, like, cancellation of games. It was just post. Some of them were rescheduled.
Yeah,
right?
You didn't get any cancellation of games. Not even when the Lions' entire coaching staff was quarantined and Billy the Towel Boy had to call the offensive plays. Sorry, Josh, you were saying?
I was saying that and the Super Bowl went off on time, but, you know, the NFL just released their salary cap a few days ago here. I believe it's $180 million salary cap that's been issued, which is surprising because it's $5 million over the last year.
It went up.
It went up.
Yeah.
It went up, and I think most people, maybe the owners and the GMs and coaches and fans were surprised to see it go up just because of the current situation that we had and have going on right now. That just speaks volumes to the NFL as a business. When you can't go to the game, spend $100 to park your car, spend $500 on like four tickets, $50 on a hot dog, $20 on a beer. Hey, I want that souvenir cup, Mom. Hey, Dad, I want that souvenir hat. You know, that kind of stuff. When you're missing out on all that revenue coming in and still be able to increase the cap by $5 million.
It's the TV revenue, man. The NFL controls, controls the marketplace for everything when it comes to television.
And just to see, like, and we thought that maybe this offseason be a little bit more busier than it is right now. I mean, it's on fire right now.
I was going to say, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's on fire.
It's not, well, I mean, it's the offseason, but they can't even make signings yet.
Mm-mm. There have been some trades that went down, though, Ben. Carson Wentz, okay? Carson Wentz, the guy that I drafted in our fantasy league 4 years ago, has done outstanding for me until this year, has been traded from the Eagles to the Colts. And the Colts really won in this situation, I think. I think Carson's still got a lot left in his tank. Just a couple years ago, he was MVP talk when they were going on their way to the Super Bowl. And what they ended up giving up was a third round to the Eagles in a conditional second round. And the conditions on that that second round pick is that if Carson Wentz plays 75% of the snaps in this 21 season, or 70% of the snaps, and the Colts make the playoffs, it goes to a first round pick. Now, I think this is a fantastic trade. And I tell you why, because he's got a lot left to prove. The Colts are, if they don't like the situation and things don't improve with Wentz, their potential out is 2022. Okay? There will be no dead cap hit for Indianapolis Colts to cut him.
I mean, it's not a bad trade. They were talking about the Bears and having to give up a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I mean, you know, we've seen some of the other quarterback trades go through, and I am very surprised that it was a conditional second and there was no first-round guaranteed pick exchanged in this. Like you said, the man was MVP talks 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, when they're on the way to the Super Bowl and they erected that statue of Nick Foles out there at the stadium. I think he blew out his knee against the Rams, but he was on the roll for MVP.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that fell out of favor with the coach. Mm-hmm. I just read today where He and Doug Peterson didn't talk for roughly 10 weeks during the season.
Yeesh.
Your starting quarterback and your head coach not having a conversation for 10 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
That's unheard of.
Unheard of. What do you think, Ben?
Well, I think there's a couple things I'd like to touch on. To go back to Doug Peterson, I do feel like he was kind of making his own bed with this entire thing because it wasn't unknown in their organization, maybe unknown to the rest of the world, but not unknown in their organization that there were some tensions between Carson Wentz and the coaching staff, specifically Doug Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
I think Wentz was kind of given a rough year. It was a really tough draw this year because their offensive line, they were on third stringers for most of that offensive line the whole season because of all the injuries they endured. And he and you could tell he was like mentally shook over some things because the way he was playing, he didn't have his composure that he's had in previous seasons. And that has to go with the relationship between the coach and him. You know, you got to channel that somehow.
Yeah.
And then with Doug Peterson, even like down the stretch after making the call to go to Hurts and then making the call to pull Hurts, it's like, you know, if Hurts is your future, why would you even consider, you know, let him out there and struggle, you know what I mean? He's a brand new kid in the league and your team is trash. Like, mm-hmm. Let him go out there, find some bearings, try some things, do some stuff. It doesn't matter if it's 100-0, the kid needs the experience. And when they pulled him, I think he wrote his own death certificate with the Eagles in that terms. To go on to the trade, I think Wentz makes out really good. And the reason why is because Indy's a competitive team. The problem that specific division has, it's an easy road to win that division. Now, they do have some off-season things they're going to have to accomplish with their wide receiving core because I think Pascal and T.Y. are both free agents this year and that have not resigned yet or have plans to resign. And there's rumblings down here in the Florida papers that T.Y. might be heading to Miami. But that's all speculation at this point. I think Wentz makes that great because he goes to a team that's got a decent front line that can be competitive and has a good defense. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes him, like, if you put him in that situation, he'll shine. He doesn't even need to be top five to be successful there. Like, he can be mediocre. I mean, Phillip Rivers was mediocre, and they had a good season. You know, they had a good run. So I think he'll be fine. Who really lost in this deal is the Eagles, and I think that their picks were subpar at that. They literally got a half a sandwich for dealing with and it kind of looked desperate. And to continue that, there's a lot of crazy trade stuff and free agent stuff going on and the rumors and everything like that are floating around, and we'll get to some of the one thing I want to talk about in a minute, but
mm-hmm.
I just want to note that what this truly does is hurts the New York Jets, and the reason why is that Wentz went for nothing.
Yep.
They're trying to deal Sam Darnold. And Wentz, to me, is a lot more attractive than Sam Darnold. And if Wentz goes for nothing,
yeah,
what are the Jets going to get for Darnold? A fifth round? Maybe a conditional fourth round? Like, or no, nobody. They might get a punter out of it or something. Like,
hey, punters are people too, Ben, okay?
Punters are people too.
Punters are people too.
I want to go back.
Speaking of good kickers, Miami, I think, just inked Sanders, their Pro Bowl kicker, for a really lucrative deal.
I think it was like $22 million.
And he was on all my fantasy teams this year and did me.
Are you going to resign him to your fantasy team, Ben?
If he's draftable, I'm not in any keeper league, so I'm going to have to pick him from the pack, you know. And we'll see what happens.
I'd say a third-round pick at minimum for him. I mean, a good kicker is hard to come by.
Third.
I would just be the Raiders and just spend a first-round pick on him, you know?
I want to go back to a couple points you made about Wentz. I think one of the things that really turned him off to this team was the Philadelphia Eagles spending a second-round pick on Jalen Hurts when Wentz had just gotten them halfway, three quarters maybe, to a Super Bowl and was in MVP talks, and they go out and spend a second rounder on an electric playmaking quarterback. I mean, how does that not feel like a knife in the back to a young signal caller?
Yeah, especially when they had a lot of holes to fill. Their wide receiving core is kind of rough.
Deplorable?
I think that's a good word.
The injuries that happened to them, because you don't expect those. However, they really didn't have a compliment to Alshon Jeffrey.
No, we've all seen Nelson Agholor try and catch a ball.
Hey, he can catch fallen babies out of burning buildings.
Yeah,
right?
We've seen Nelson Agholor try and catch a ball. A baby? Yeah, sure, maybe. Yeah. But a football? No, that's tough.
Yeah.
And their running back situation is always a toss-up. I think they finally got something to Miles Sanders here.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
We'll see how he progresses, like if he continues. But Philly's got history. It seems like ever since, was Westbrook, right, and Deuce Daly and them.
Oh my God! You're going old, man. You're old school.
Years ago, they really haven't had that solid running back that's been consistent year after year.
Yeah,
they get somebody they're decent. They get them through a year, and then they're gone, right? Or they just fall off and never reproduce.
Yeah, no, and I agree that the complete winner of this trade is Carson Wentz. He goes to a team with an amazing offensive line, and they also just happen to have Jonathan Taylor, and that's a good thing to have if you're looking. You know, if you're looking to free up the passing game, is a guy that you can hand the ball to and just say, go.
Mm-hmm.
And he does.
That makes it that makes an interesting point, because they got Marlon Mack, too, which he's going into free agency, I believe. I believe they're not expecting him back, which is going to throw him out in free agency. But
yeah, Mack won't be back. Yeah. They also have Hines, who's their pass-catching specialist, and, you know, he's good in that role. But if you have Taylor and Hines, I don't think there's any reason to have Marlon Mack back.
Mm-hmm. And the Eagles, I mean, again, it's just a great situation for Carson Wentz to leave Philadelphia, is because, like you said, the offensive line is just porous, right? So I don't think they strung together five same starters in any of the games, and their defense. You couldn't stop anything, and that division that self is just horrible. I mean, I think the losing record. I think one of the last teams that I can remember that went to the playoffs with a losing record was Seattle Seahawks at 7-9, and they beat the Saints in the wild card game that they just came off a Super Bowl win.
We won't talk about that.
I love that game. I have it recorded. I have it on my computer. And sometimes I watch it, because it had the best run that I've ever seen in any game. It was the Marshawn Lynch earthquake run against the defending champions.
That was just amazing. It was amazing. I'll give you that.
And there's going to be some pretty big free agents coming up. Are we assuming that Dak Prescott is going to be franchise tagged again?
Ugh. Well, it's one of those things. Dak might not be ready to play halfway through the season, let alone the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to pay him essentially to potentially make a comeback the following year. I mean, unless the guy's got Wolverine blood. To be honest, I mean, look at this. I mean, I ran into some issues, but any type of compound fracture or anything like that, you know, you're looking at something pretty gnarly. And to be able to come back at the level you need to, I mean, Jerry Jones has, you know, if you want to dump the money, let him dump the money, I guess. But you know, they weren't willing to give Dak the money he wanted. I think it's astronomical. And I think it's outrageous, but that's just me. I don't see it working out in their favor, even if they do.
Yeah, I mean, I believe, and one of those stipulations is that Dak wanted, it was a difference of a year, too, because Dak wanted to have the option to re-up his contract. So there was difference of money and difference of length of contract, too. But they're having like $33 million a year. I understand that players want that insurance of a long-term deal, but getting, you know, 30 or $30 million guaranteed.
I think it's 37 if he signs a franchise tag again this year.
Well, thank you, Cousins, because he got like franchise tag four times or whatever with Washington.
Don't blame Cousins. It's Washington's fault. It's Daniel Snyder's fault.
Jeez. And that's just going to drive up contracts for other players, too, in the quarterback field. Mahomes signs a $500 million, a half a billion dollar contract with Kansas City.
Yeah, but Mahomes, I would argue that Mahomes is worth every penny.
Oh, when for sure.
The last time Cousins was the guy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of teams who spend a lot of money in hopes that, like, if you could secure a quarterback, we could build our team around him and this whole ideology behind that. But there has to be somebody out there that's looking at these guys and saying, you know what? You're good. You're pretty dang good, but you're not that good. You're missing something. And you see that with Cousins. And you see that with some of these other quarterbacks. And I'll get to one specifically a little bit.
See, I don't really think that's how it works anymore. If you are a quarterback, a starting quarterback who's made his bones in the NFL for over 5 years, you're going to be the next highest paid NFL player. Until the next offseason, when another quarterback that's been in the league for 5 years has made his bones, then he's going to take you over. We've seen it with Stafford. We've seen it with, you know, Goff. I mean, Dak Prescott now. Pat Mahomes. It's just going to keep happening because that quarterback position is so vital. I mean, just ask the Redskins. They somehow made the playoffs with a combination of Haskins, Smith, and Heinicke.
Heinicke!
Which he made his bones in one playoff game mm-hmm. this year. I mean, he got signed to what, $3 million?
I'll get that information. I thought it was like $8 million.
It might have been. It was an astronomical amount. It was the Derek Anderson special where he has, you know, one or two good Derek games, Anderson. And then you get signed for a boatload of money.
Active contracts.
Jeez.
But as someone who
it's ugly.
As someone who started, oh my gosh. Minnesota's quarterback, Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, someone who started Cousins this year in fantasy and just traded for Dak Prescott, you know, traded a first-round pick. I think Dak's going to be back, and he's going to be healthy, and he's going to lead all of his fantasy owners to a championship this year.
Oh.
That might be true, might be wishful thinking. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out.
That's about 90% wishful thinking, but...
You were right, Dylan. He signed a two-year, $4.75 million contract with a $1 billion signing bonus, 1.5 guaranteed.
He made $4 million in 60 minutes in a losing effort.
I'm going to tell you who's going to make that kind of money in 60 minutes, and we're over 60 minutes right now, is this podcast is going to make that kind of money. I'm telling you right now.
We might want to reinvest some of that.
That's the type of draining that makes big things happen.
Big things. We're moving the world. Give me a stick big enough to move the world. Is that what? Who said that?
It was a lever big enough. Yeah. And,
that's it. Move a little slugger. I'll move the world, Ben.
Oh my God.
That's right.
I just want to reiterate that I am the one drinking here.
Yes. And I'm acquiring shares into the Atlanta Braves.
Oh my God. By the time this podcast is over, he's going to be half owner.
Half owner. I like that.
There you go.
So, Ben, who's the guy you were talking about? Who's the quarterback that you're talking about?
So as a Detroit Lions fan, and I often fall in hot water with some of my thoughts and feelings on players of that team. But one thing I'm super ecstatic about is this trade that transpired between the Lions and the Rams. Blockbuster trade. Out of everything that I expected to happen with Stafford and being dealt from Detroit, I did not see the Rams putting together an offer that would be this lucrative. I didn't see the Rams being the team that was selected, but if Stafford did have influence in it, he probably wanted to go to a contending option. And the Rams, I think, out of the teams that were interested, were the best contenders. So I just did not know that they were having their troubles with Goff and looking to move him as well. So that we have a lot of interesting pieces here. And first and foremost, I'll speak on what I like about Detroit in this deal and why I think it's amazing. And then I will touch base on some of the rumor and innuendo, so to speak, with Jared Goff and the Rams and why the deal really possibly came to happen, right? So, Matt Stafford, let me first by clarifying that I think Matt Stafford is a stand-up guy. He is an amazing person. He's done a lot for the city. He's inspirational. He's great in the locker room, from what I understand, and all these other accolades, right, you can give to Matt Stafford. He has certain statistics that are going to stand out until they're going to be broken by Patrick Mahomes and other players that are coming up through the ranks now. But there's some records that he has that really make this next part, like, kind of controversial. I think he's nothing more than a third-tier quarterback, and he has nothing but garbage time statistics. I am not a Matt Stafford fan.
Hot.
So as a Detroit Lions fan, I am head over heels about this trade. Stafford, he's known to be the hardest worker in the room, but just because you're the hardest worker in the room doesn't mean you're the best. You can be the hardest worker in the room, but you can still suck at your job. And that's, I think, what was going on in Detroit.
There was a metaphorical knife in the heart to Dylan right now.
Suck at your job. Oh, Ben, you're killing me. I am a Stafford supporter. He has had garbage around him, especially this year on the defensive side of the ball.
So my hang-up on Stafford this season, there were a couple of games that you could attribute to the defense falling apart, but in all statistical categories except like one, he was not even top 10. Okay, this is a league that had banged up quarterbacks. This is a league that really only had like a big four main awesome amazing quarterbacks this year, and he couldn't even break top 10 in any statistical category that matters. So for me, this is like, now the big failsafe that every Detroit Lions fan that has done and has will shout out is that his offensive line. He had the 13th best offensive line in the league. Guess how many teams go to the playoffs? 14. So there were teams that made the playoffs that didn't even have a better offensive line statistically on the year than what Matt Stafford had.
His best receiver was also a 31-year-old Marvin Jones.
I'm talking about one particular season and this whole thing. But if you look over his career, a lot of his statistics, with the occasion of one or two things, are mediocre and don't break top 10. He has had the longevity in his career, and there's been so many games to where he has such garbage time statistics because he finds a way to have to come back in the fourth quarter. Well, some of these games are low-scoring games that he has to do this. And guess what? Had he scored touchdowns in the first three, you wouldn't have to worry about scoring in the fourth. Am I right? Right? So he's missing that competitive edge in my eye, and I'm not a guru by any sense of imagination. I watch the TV every Sunday like every other Detroit Lions fan, but I just see the inability to turn the switch, to make things happen, and get a W. Specifically, when you look at his career wins against teams at 500 or better. In his entire tenure, he has less than 20 wins. I think it's less than 15, but I lost count this afternoon. It's definitely less than 20 wins in his entire career against a winning team. You will never make the playoffs and be successful or even have a road to the Super Bowl. When he did have a good team, he couldn't beat winning organizations. And it's just unfortunate. And as much as I would like to blame the organization, I mean, Patricia's tenure was atrocious. But even in the Jim Caldwell era, he's had a couple different head coaches. It's just not the right fit, right? And he does not have that switch to flip it on. Now, it might be just Detroit. He could go to L.A. and produce. But if my inclination and my feelings are right about Stafford, this is huge for Detroit. because not only are they going to suck the next couple of years, because let's be honest, it's the Lions, they're going to get a couple of years worth of good draft picks, but if Stafford goes to the Rams and he's mediocre and they're an 8-win team next year, we're getting two good draft picks back-to-back 2 years in a row, right? So for me, as a Lions fan, I'm like, okay, if we're truly in rebuild mode, we have our hands at potential prospects coming through the draft in certain key positions to fill one of the 1,000 holes that we have in that defense that you had mentioned. This year it's pretty rough. But I think it's the best win-win scenario. I mean, Detroit will take a $19.9 million cap hit for the Stafford deal, but it's not as bad as the Rams, who are losing 22 on Goff. So Goff, statistically, he was either right behind or right in front of Matt Stafford in all those applicable statistical categories, but again, like third tier. So for me, the quarterback swap, they're like the same person. One's just a little younger, but it was the draft picks that really made me happy, and the fact that I don't have to watch Stafford on Sunday and curse his name anymore. I can curse somebody else's name for once.
Oh, Ben. All right, I've got a couple of issues here. Give me some time. I am going to read to you the list of 1,000-yard rushers in Detroit Lions history. Reggie Bush, 2013. James Stewart, 2002. Steve Owens, 1971. Billy Sims, 1983. Barry Sanders, 93. Kevin Jones, 04. James Stewart, 2000. Billy Sims, 80. Barry Sanders, 90. Barry Sanders, 92. Billy Sims, 81. And then it's Barry Sanders, Barry Sanders, Barry Sanders, Barry Sanders, Barry Sanders, Barry Sanders, and Barry Sanders. Matthew Stafford played with one of those men, and that was Reggie Bush in 2013.
Wow.
When you know that handing the ball off and gaining yards is not a threat, you are going to key on the pass. Stafford has had nobody to take the heat off of him and the pressure off of him as a running back. Yet he has still had 19 fourth quarter comebacks since 2011, more than anyone in the NFL, and 22 game-winning drives, more than anyone in the NFL since 2011. The man has been the entire Lions offense. Sure, he has had Calvin Johnson. Lately, he had Kenny Galladay, except for this year.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have an O-line. He doesn't have a running back. He has one or two good receivers. He has been the entire Lions offense his entire career. But I tend to agree with you that the Lions won this trade because they were going nowhere in the next 2 years. They don't have the talent. And with these first-round draft picks, they just might. But I really do think that Matthew Stafford could produce in L.A., being able to hand the ball off to Cam Akers and hand the ball off to Henderson, and having Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp and everyone else like that to catch the football for him. I think this is a win-win for everyone. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm a big Stafford fan, obviously. But I do think this was the right trade to make for everyone involved.
And for me, being a Seattle Seahawks fan, I'm really scared of Stafford coming in within the division right now, Ben. On that team, with that defensive line and those weapons, I mean, the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, right now, if you jump on FanDuel right now and make a futures bet, you can take Los Angeles Rams for division outright plus 170.
Ooh.
I think that's how valuable Matthew's going to be to that division. I'm actually thinking that they're in contention for a deep run in the playoffs and even, maybe even the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, that division is going to get interesting because there are some rumblings with the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson being, you know, unhappy with how things have kind of been in terms of his protection and the sacks he's been taking, and he's been one of the most sacked quarterbacks in recent years. Part of that is because some of their play, I feel as if some of their play selection does involve him being very mobile and try to create stuff and that sort of stuff, those sort of things. But I'm going to say something too, and this might upset you, Josh, and I do apologize. Nothing disrespect to you.
I got nothing but love for you, Ben.
Seahawks. I had Metcalf, Lockett on my fantasy teams. My wife was winning our fantasy league for the first half of the season because of Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
But there became a point in time to where they found a way to penetrate that offensive line, and it blows my mind when a coaching staff, and I watched this happen in the Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes. This is probably the best. That's probably the best example. But when you go into halftime and you know that your offensive line is being obliterated by four pass rushers, four. You don't even have to blitz anybody. Your front four are penetrating and getting pressure. Not just one getting through like a tackle or something on a weird play, but multiple players every single time are breaking that front line, and they do nothing to keep a tight end on the line. They do nothing to keep a running back in the backfield to pick up a block. They do nothing to give them additional protections. When the Seattle Seahawks had plenty of people who were big and capable of blocking, and didn't give his wide receivers the opportunity to make their routes.
And
you have to throw the ball early.
Yeah.
You have to do all these things, and you miss cues and create interceptions and fumble and all these other things that come from these scenarios. It blows my mind, and it was very frustrating to watch the Seahawks this past season. And to be honest, I blame Pete Carroll, because he should, if he's not the one calling these plays or these schemes, and he's got a coordinator and a staff that's doing so, and again, I'm not familiar with how their coaching is set up there, but he needs to grab them and get rid of them, because like I half the season went way downhill because they couldn't pick up an extra block.
Well, they did get rid of Brian Schottenheimer this offseason here. I will say that, you know, having an NFL Sunday ticket here, I'm able to watch all of the Seahawks games, and that first part of the year, like you said, I mean, he's just throwing dimes. I mean, this ball is going to the moon and back, right into the breadbasket of his receivers, and no one can do anything about it. But to agree with Russell Wilson here, he's never had an offensive line.
No.
Never had an offensive line. The best line that the Seahawks has when Steve Hutchinson was still there, and they were making that Super Bowl run with Sean Alexander, Matt Hasselbeck, and Walter Jones was on anchoring the left side of that line. Hall of Famer Walter Jones.
That's the we're going to take the ball, we're going to score, Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah,
yeah,
great.
Yeah,
I mean, hey, someone scored. It wasn't us. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Yeah.
But like, so Russell Wilson. You got two things here. You got Russell Wilson, and you got Metcalf, and you got Chris Carson in the backfield, right? Now, when their offensive kind of fell flat on its face, you got to remember that Chris Carson did miss some time with a foot injury. So when you don't have a bell cow running back in the backfield that just lowers his head and bounces off a guy and still gets 4 yards after the contact, and now you just stopped. You're just a team that's now one-dimensional throwing the ball, and you know it's going to go to either Tyler Lockett or Metcalf. Well, you got to cover Metcalf because he's a 6'4" stud muffin out there,
chiseled out of stone.
Oh my gosh! I mean, I saw his pregame stuff. He guy's jumping like he could jump over the damn crossbar, Ben. But like so,
yeah.
And you got. I mean, it's just like Wentz. The offensive line in Seattle is, you might as well say it's non-existent. Dwayne Brown is getting old, and they got, I mean, they had, when they draft their offensive line players, they're drafting them way late in the draft or acquiring them in free agency.
Yeah, it's fifth or sixth round before they take an old lineman.
So they got to address that, and I understand why Russell Wilson's frustrated, and you being a fantasy owner frustrated too. But I mean, nothing's going to change until they start drafting offensive linemen higher up in the draft.
Or hear me out. As someone who owns the first overall pick in the rookie draft, they draft Harris out of Alabama and get rid of Carson. And that solves everyone's problems, especially mine.
I do not have a first-round pick in our rookie draft. I traded that for Joey Burrow, by the way, Ben.
Oh, no.
Hear me out. The guy was getting murdered in a pocket in Cincinnati. I mean, but he was making plays, though. Yeah. They don't even have an indoor facility to practice, Ben. They're all outside, bro. But, like, he didn't have... I mean, I watched the Philadelphia Eagles, because at the time I had Wentz, was just doing absolutely atrocious for me. I was runner-up in the championship game. I lost. I came in second place last year. This year, I didn't even make it to the playoffs, all because of Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz. But that, I digress. But, like, I took Joey Burrow. I have confidence in this kid. He's going to come bounce back. He's going to be the tiger in that locker room. He's going to go and get him. But, like, so, you know, I had to give him a first-round pick for him. I think I made a wise investment.
See, as someone who...
I'm excited to see him next year.
As someone who had Darius Geis as their main running back last year, I threw in the towel relatively early, and I have 4 first-round picks this year, yeah. Including the number 1 overall. So we played this year very different, Josh.
Darius Geis, for people that don't know, we have a league that's a 4-year keeper league, and we're not resetting. We're just kind of just...
No, it's a dynasty league.
Yeah, it's pretty much a dynasty league now. Darius Geis was my first pick the year after there. And he failed. I'm not afraid to admit that.
Not as hard as he failed for me.
Yeah, well, I seemed to trade him pretty good. You got James White off of me after I used him up for my team. And then you got Darius Geis, which none of us won in that trade.
Yeah, I got hit hard in that.
But I got, hey, Ben, I took Chris Carson back when he was a rookie in my draft. It was my last pick. I traded him away. And then I got him back, plus Aaron Jones from the Packers.
Oh, jeez.
So. You forgot to mention the part where I beat you with your draft pick.
It's going to be an interesting year because there's a lot of big free agents that are out there. And if you got some of these guys lined up on your fantasy team, and they could be going to a team that could either be lights out or not. And I'm very excited to see all the moving pieces, and I do think that because quarterbacks are starting to move so freely, whether they're good deals or bad deals, I am excited to see what type of attention that gives to the other players and see where they want to go. I know that some are going to be looking for a payday, some are going to be looking for a championship, some are going to try to find an even deal, but I'm really excited to see what happens with some of these guys, specifically Aaron Jones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have his replacement.
And I own him.
All lined up, ready.
I had him. I had him, dropped him, and he picked him up.
For a dollar. I drafted him for you.
Yeah. You guys did the draft pick for me. Gosh.
Dude was money. He was money last year. He's outside of, like, any potential injury issues, the guy produces when he's in the game. And he's tough, and he takes his licks. Chris Carson, too.
Yeah, if he can stay on the field.
Those are your workhorses.
Rumor...
It would be interesting to see. I would love to see either of those two players go to another team.
Rumor right now is Carson will be with another team. Seattle's not looking at bringing him back.
That's a big mistake if they don't.
But he hasn't been on the field.
They might not be able to afford him. Because they've got some re-signings that need to take place. And because of all the holes they need to fill, there's a couple decent linemen that are going to be free agents this year. But Seattle really needs to bring in their defense too. They got kind of holes on both sides of the ball, and they might have to spend some money in free agency.
Yeah, there's no Legion of Boom anymore, and with Chris Carson, the best ability, especially for a running back, is availability, and he hasn't had it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neither is Rashad Penny, their quote-unquote backup. I mean, they can't be relied on.
And they spent a first-round pick on Rashad Penny too, and I could see them cutting their losses there because the guy hasn't. He came into camp. He was still a little overweight. Injuries, bugs hit him. Last year we had to resort to Marshawn Lynch, which I was happy to see Marshawn Lynch come back.
If you got to resort to beast mode, you're in a decent spot.
I agree, but like it wasn't Marshawn of old, but it was just good to see him in a running and back and wearing that old 2-4. Back in the green and blue, And but like Ben, I'm going to tell you right now what people are probably going to stay away from as far as team wise is the Houston Texans in free agency. It is a dumpster fire down in the old Houston, Texas.
I want to talk about Houston for a little bit because this just intrigues me and makes me feel just so much better about being a Detroit Lions fan. When you are playing in the AFC Championship game one year, and then the very next year, you are or would have been the owners of the third overall draft pick, which you traded away, you know that your front office has absolutely screwed something up. First of all, they traded DeAndre Hopkins for the ghost of David Johnson. And that wasn't enough for the Cardinals. They had the balls to say, DeAndre's not enough for this washed-up running back. We also need a third-round pick. And in his infinite wisdom, Bill O'Brien decides, you know what? You're right, Arizona. I do want to give you one of the best wide receivers in the league and a third-round pick for this washed-up running back. All the while, the starting quarterback, that's not going to make him real happy, you know, losing a talent like DeAndre Hopkins. Well, fast forward a couple games. Houston finally comes to their senses, fires Bill O'Brien, and said franchise quarterback, you know, he kind of wants to be in on, you know, the hire of the new coach and the new general manager that he's going to be playing under. Houston's ownership decides, no franchise quarterback. You go into this little corner here. We know what's best for you. doesn't make Deshaun Watson too happy. Kind of wants out of that.
I imagine it wouldn't.
Yeah. Kind of wants out of that situation now. So now he has to play for a general manager he doesn't want, a coach which he really doesn't want, and he says, you know, I think I'd like to be traded. Please trade me. Ownership once again says, no, Deshaun, go sit over here in this corner. Oh, and by the way, J.J. Watt, one of the best defensive players that we've ever had, we're going to go ahead and release you like you requested. We understand that you don't want to be here. I honestly don't know if Deshaun Watson's going to play this year if they don't trade him. He has a fat contract that he just signed, but I don't think that he has any qualms about sitting out this year if that's what it takes to get out of Houston.
You know, it's a very interesting scenario because in the NFL, I mean, I would say you probably see this a lot in the NBA. I feel like there's a lot more emotion in the NBA in terms of players and whether they're unhappy or they're happy and their head cases and they have to be traded and they have to do this. And I see a lot of that going on in the NBA, right? The NFL, not really so much clout. They're a little bit more hard-nosed there. But when it comes to the Houston Texans, like you're right, just to touch on that, you hit the nail on the head. There's definitely some issues there that are like, what are they thinking to let the bottom fall out on this? I mean, they're already in a bad spot because you talk about the DeAndre Hopkins trade. What about all the trades they made with Miami where they lost their first and second-round picks to Miami?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that was before that entire Hopkins situation.
Because they're like, oh, hey, we had a good season, and we're still got a number three pick, right?
Yeah.
It's like they're jumping up and down because they've got potentially a new franchise quarterback, but it does seem like the rumblings around Miami seem like they're not sold on Tua yet, and will entertain deals to potentially move him, which if Houston was smart, they would try to go after him and try to get one of the picks back. But it's wild. It's a wild scenario because J.J. Watt, I mean, he might be on the out anyway. Like, his production was decent this year, but, you know, the defense is on the field a lot. He had a lot of opportunities to get a sack or make a play, right? But they stunk. Houston stunk up the field. So, Will Fuller, it'd be interesting to see how he rebounds after his suspension, but I think he's a free agent this year, and I correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, if they bring him back. He is a free agent this year. And to go back to Miami, That's one of the big rumors that's out there right now is Tua and a pick for Deshaun Watson. And I could see that working out for both teams. I mean, the Texans badly need some draft picks right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can get their original draft picks back from the Dolphins, I think that'd be a best-case scenario for both teams.
The problem with Miami is Miami doesn't have a wide receiver, and especially not even a wide receiver that Tua likes to throw to. Devontae Parker and Fitzpatrick were money. And then whenever they pulled the trigger and put Tua in, Tua can't throw the ball to the wide receiver. He can only throw to his tight ends. And their tight ends are decent, but they're not dynamic. You know what I mean? So it definitely backed them into a corner. Thankfully, they got a good running system there. But it's interesting because, like, if I'm Miami, you know, I wouldn't mind giving up Tua, right? And if I'm going to get Deshaun Watson, that puts me in the playoffs. That's a guaranteed division win right there, right? Or at least competitive enough with Buffalo. And we both, you know, we come in at number one and number four seed or five seed or whatever, and we can go. But like, what do you give up? I mean, I keep the number three, ditch the late pick, and maybe give them the late second rounder.
Yeah, looking at what Detroit got for Matt Stafford, I think that kind of set the market for Deshaun Watson. It's going to cost them their number three pick. If they want to get Watson, it'll be Tua and a number three. I think that'll be enough to get it from Texas or from the Texans. but yeah, like you said, I mean, with Devontae Parker there, he's a legit wide receiver, and I think Deshaun Watson can get him the ball. And with Miles Gaskins there to, you know, catch it out of the backfield and be a little bit of a scat back, I think that is absolutely a playoff team right away. If they make that deal.
And they just missed it this year. They just missed the mark. And, I mean, Devontae Parker is a great set of hands. He's like money hands. But he's a number two. You need him in the number two spot. You don't want him scraping down the field, right? He's not your streaker. So you need that fast young person. You know, there's plenty of wide receiving talent coming up, I think, in the draft this year that they could address it, especially at number three. But again, if they lose that, maybe they give their either number three or their late first round pick, and then give them a third round. Miami, I think, has like eight or nine picks or something in this draft coming up, so they have a couple they could spare, and they don't have a ton of holes. But it all depends on how Tua is going to come into his sophomore year and start the season as the guy and see how he reacts to that, I guess. But I'm not I think he could develop into a player. I don't think he's there yet. And if I'm Miami, it might be worth getting Deshaun, because if you want to get a championship now, get it now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're young players are definitely their best players with Gaskins, and if you want to keep Tua in there, I don't know if they could get him with the late round pick that they have. But they could definitely trade that third round pick back and get Pitts out of Florida, the tight end. And I think that'd give them kind of a dynamic pass catching tight end to go along with Parker. But they also have $26 million in cap space to sign a wide receiver one if they wanted. I mean, they're decently set up.
Yeah,
they. I mean, Juju's just sitting out there. If you want to go ahead and get him as a wide receiver one, him and Devontae Parker, that's a decent receiving core. Especially if you have Gaskins in the backfield and you draft Pitts. I mean, that's kind of a scary offense.
They could easily look across the state, and Chris Godwin sitting right there.
Oh, absolutely.
He's the number two, but he's more than capable to, I think, run number one, because there's been plenty of instances where Evans been hurt and he's filled in.
Even Antonio Brown, he's going to be available too, yeah.
Wild card this year. He was my wild card pick and my wild card bet this year in the Super Bowl. With Josh, you know, he's the guy. Like, I think that he is going to emerge and make a team, you know, scary. And he could easily be thrown into there. And then, you know, Juju was the one that came to mind for me. I know T.Y. had expressed that he was interested in Florida and Miami, but I think Juju was the guy I would like to see go and Devontae Parker, because Juju does well when he's got a compliment.
Yeah, I mean, T.Y. Hilton, I think he's also 31, isn't he? I mean, it's You know, it's,
he's aging out a little bit, and he did. I mean, he didn't have the same type of season that he has been known to have. But Philip Rivers is also not going to throw 400 yards a game either. So
right, no, I like that. I like that Godwin, but I agree with you. Juju is the guy that I would target for if I were the Dolphins. And then you pair him. I mean, Tua can get them the ball. He's capable enough to get them the ball. He's not going to be your, you know, I don't think he's going to live up to the number 5 overall draft pick like they took him. It,
right.
To me, he just doesn't have that type of talent. But he's going to be good enough to be able to get the ball downfield if you have a Juju Smith-Schuster, you have a Devontae Parker. You know, Gaskins can take a load off in the backfield. He can catch it out of the backfield. That, to me, that's a playoff roster.
Especially in a division where the Patriots are so down, because that's been their division for the last 20 years.
Yeah, Buffalo is going to be your competition there with Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs. I mean, that's a good offense too. But I don't think Josh Allen can – it's going to be tough for him to replicate the kind of season that he had this year.
I don't know. I like Josh Allen being better next year.
Really?
And the reason why, yeah, I feel like their team is super young. They still have some kinks to work out in the backfield. I think they definitely run the ball a lot more next year. But I think because they are such a young squad, I like them aging. I like them progressing. And specifically, the come-up that Allen had from last year to this year, just his mechanic change.
Yeah, he learned how to throw the ball.
To do in one offseason blew my mind. And to me, that's a talent that is not even just coachable, but that's like Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady-style talent. Like, Tom Brady, his progression through the years, in his early years, he won championships on strong defense.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned earlier about Stafford not really having a running back. Name a running back that ever ran for 1,000-plus yards that was dynamic that Tom Brady had, right, other than maybe Corey Dillon in the beginning.
There we go. That's the name I was going to bring up.
You know what I mean? Like, nobody talked about the defense in his late, like, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 championships. It's all been the Tom Brady show the rest of the way, right, because he can put that switch and go. Now you look at a team that can build that type of player. And I see that in Josh Allen. And I see Josh Allen just being able to flick that switch when he needs to. And just in one season, what he was able to turn around. The Bills, I think, are going to be hot next year. Bills Mafia is exciting to watch. And I just love it. I love it. I'm happy for Buffalo because Buffalo, they, you know, this is a Lions fan. I mean, I'm also... like, I'm sure, you know, all my listeners out there that are going to be tuning in once they find out I'm guesting on this podcast, right? I'm also a New Orleans Saints fan. My mother was from New Orleans. My father from Detroit. You know, I have a split household, in sort of speak, with that. And I was a Drew Brees fanatic forever. But, you know, like, I could see Allen just being so dominant over the next 10 years, and him and Mahomes having kind of a Brady, Peyton Manning style playoff every single year to where they're going back and forth, and the winner of that game is your AFC leader, right? Unless a team emerges, you know, you'll have a team breakthrough or whatever every once in a couple of years and that sort of thing. But I think Allen, if they can keep that team going in that direction, has a lot of poise, a lot of hope.
I'll agree with you there. I mean, I don't see the Jets doing anything in the next ever because they're the New York Jets. And New England, I think we've seen this year, was all Tom Brady. I mean, we knew that he worked without weapons for his entire career, really. But it really showed when he wasn't there that they did not have the type of playmakers that they need. Miami is, I think, the team that you need to look out for in that division. But I'm with you. Every folding table in Western New York needs to fear the Buffalo Bills Mafia.
I love it. That's the wrestling fan of me coming out, too. And I'm just like, oh, why aren't I in Buffalo right now? You know?
Oh, all right. We've been we've been going for about an hour and 45 minutes here. So do we want to come up with just a couple quick hits with bets to wrap it up?
I think that's a great idea. Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any bets that I'm willing to take right now, just because, you know, Michigan had to be one of the last states here to throw up online sports betting at the end of football season. So I did take Super Bowl bets, and I'll cover what I did in the Super Bowl. I took tails as a coin toss and lost that one, unfortunately. But I did take Gronk, 2.5 receptions, over 2.5 receptions, hit that. I scored that touchdown, anytime touchdown. I hit that. And then I took Chris Jones over 2.5 tackles plus assists. So I did hit that. Ben, do you want to share what you took?
Oh, yeah. So because Florida doesn't have it, everything was done third party through my Michigan support group up there. you know, like, you guys got it at the end of the year. We'll probably get it next year. But I was sitting on a parlay with scoring because the positive on an Antonio Brown and Leonard Fournette touchdown was too much for me to ignore.
Oof.
And
yeah.
So I parlayed a score from Antonio Brown at any time, Leonard Fournette at any time, and Edward Dallaire at any time. And I thought the one that wasn't going to happen if I was going to miss that bet was the Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
He was the first.
For
and
sure.
I lit up like a Christmas tree, and then Fournette had that beast run, and I'm sitting on top of the world, but Kansas City could not score, and when they were in the red zone, and they had 10 yards to go, they had Damian Williams, or whatever his name is,
yep,
on the field, not even Edward Tolera. I'm like, how did you not have the kid on the field? I was just all lit up. I was like, come on!
I was looking at my wife, and I was like, Ben's going to hit this. Ben is going to hit this parlay. He is going to make money tonight from the Super Bowl. He was going to hit it, and then they just couldn't put it all together. They just could not put it all together.
It was disappointing.
What nukes do you got for us, Dylan?
Oh,
what is your nuke bets that you're going
to
take?
I want to go back to the Super Bowl. First of all, I had tails just like you did, Josh.
Yeah, I mean,
lost on that.
Anyone, I mean, you flip a quarter in a lunchroom like I did as a kid,
yeah,
it was tails every time.
Oh, absolutely. Tails never fails.
Tails never fails.
Yeah, tails kicked me in the junk.
Yep.
And then I took one of the safest bets I thought that I'd make. You know, Travis Kelce. You know.
Yeah.
Over 5 receptions. Not a problem at all. Oh, and a touchdown. Sorry.
And a touchdown.
Yeah, and a touchdown. Sorry, yeah. Not a problem. I got kicked in the junk there. And then I took the Chiefs.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. That's also a junk kick. I did not have a good Super Bowl. Mm. Not even a little bit.
What I learned, and this is because my team lost to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, is you never bet against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
Well, I did bet against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl one time. The only really Super Bowl bet that I've made. And a little guy named David Tyree happened to catch a ball against his helmet.
Oh, my God.
And a mouth breather named Eli Manning brought home a championship to the New York Giants. That made me quite a bit of money.
That had been awkward, yeah, Thanksgiving.
Can we just talk about how Peyton or Eli Manning has a couple Super Bowl wins?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the man made me some money, I'll be honest. And I will respect him forever for that. But right now, I've been into a lot of hockey betting.
Mm-hmm.
Up until tonight, I've been doing pretty well, actually.
Lay it down for our viewers. Or listeners. We're not on TV.
Tonight, I went with the Chicago Blackhawks over the Carolina Hurricanes, plus 1.5 goals.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, in the third period, Carolina is winning 3-2, but Chicago is covering the spread, so I'm actually okay there. I went with the Red Wings.
Assuming that they don't get an empty netter here in the final minutes.
Yeah, we're we're following that pretty close, Ben. I went with the Detroit Red Wings. Bet with my heart, not with my head.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know better than to do that, and it's just reaffirming that lesson. I have lost that bet, and I will lose that bet in the future. I can almost guarantee it.
if I could give you any advice on the betting on the Red Wings, if you bet against the Red Wings every single game, you win more than you will lose.
Depending on the spread, they like lately they have liked to lose close, and that has not been good for the spread.
Yes, they have.
So, I mean, if we're signing off, like I said, Chicago Blackhawks right now are winning me some money. Detroit lost me some money. I'll be even for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's all I got for tonight.
Well, gosh, guys, this is a good way to kick off our podcasting careers. I think we had a very good conversation. We jumped around. It's very loosey goosey. I liked it, and I Ben, we appreciate you coming on here and hopefully being a featured guest and a part of this journey with us together on this podcast. And we can't thank you enough for joining in for the last 2 hours and talking about sports with a couple of stooges sitting in together in a man cave with all these computers up.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, gentlemen, it was an absolute pleasure. I'm very grateful that you thought of me to bring aboard. I know my knowledge in sports is probably more prominent in WWE and various other things, but I'm sure my wife will be eternally grateful for the fact that I got all the sports talk out with some guys and not her, where she doesn't want to hear any lick of bit of what I have to say.
Well, we can't thank you enough, Ben. Thank you very much. So again, to our listeners out there, we appreciate you guys for even considering clicking that link and listening to this podcast. Again, we are talking through $30 mics that we bought off of Amazon. We got Ben coming through a Bluetooth speaker that we got the mic to. And this podcast will get better. And we just can't tell you how much we appreciate you guys listening to us. And we value your feedback. So until we meet again, we're going to say good night.
And good luck.